Hello there and welcome back to Archaeology News Weekly. I am, of course, David Connolly, and we are, of course, catching up. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website, along with Past Horizons, your source for unique articles and news from around the world. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And of course, don't forget Stone Pages' own iPhone app, Archaeo News, which gives you archaeology news in your pocket. We start with a report on a large grant to help revamp the area around Stonehenge. Then it's sweet music from a 3,000-year-old musical instrument unearthed in Vietnam. Three Paleolithic sites have been found in China. And did the Neolithic ball bearings build Stonehenge? I think I've already got the answer to that one. The world's oldest copper age settlement is found in Serbia, but more seriously, for heritage conservation, we report on a Chinese mine in Afghanistan which is threatening an ancient site. We report also on improvements of the Megalithic Portal website before unravelling the secrets of an Iron Age bog body. Did Neanderthals mature faster than modern humans? Well, we'll find out in this report. And we also ask, are archaeological sites vulnerable to global warming and erosion? There's an amazing Bronze Age find at a Cambridgeshire quarry dig, and another amazing find as unearthed near Glasgow. They're perhaps not quite up to the same level as the Cambridgeshire one. A conference sheds light on sounds of the past. Well, finally, we are finishing with the continuing saga of a road that will be driven through a piece of Tasmanian's Aboriginal history. Remember, of course, you can also be listening to this on Stone Pages Archaeo News app, as well as keeping up with the news as it happens. So, without further ado, here we go. Stonehenge is getting a £10 million grant that conservators say will help restore some of the dignity to a World Heritage site blighted by busy roads and cramped facilities. English Heritage said it is now at about two-thirds of the money it needs to revamp the area around the prehistoric circle of stones, although the group acknowledged the improvements probably won't come in time for the 2012 Olympic Games, when hordes of tourists are expected to descend upon the site. Currently, for example, there's actually only one outdoor refreshment kiosk. Yeah, I said it, one outdoor refreshment kiosk to serve nearly 1 million visitors to the site every year. That's a lot of burgers. The proposed centre would consist of a pair of single-storey areas of glass and timber about a mile and a half away to the west of the prehistoric stones. This visitor centre facilities would include an exhibition and education facilities, a cafe, shop and toilets, while a transit system would transport visitors to and from the World Heritage Site. The new £10 million grant is being awarded by the Heritage Lottery Foundation, which uses money raised through the National Lottery to refurbish museums, parks and archaeological areas. English Heritage spokesman Rene Falk says the cash takes the group two-thirds of the way to the goal. More information about the proposed visitor centre is available at www.stonehengevisitorcentre.org. Let's hope there's a wee bit of money left over for other groups to get us through this rather tough times that we have ahead. Now we head off to Vietnam, where a set of stone musical instruments dating from 3,000 years ago have been unearthed by a farmer. The musical instrument comprises of five slabs of black-blue stone, which, when arranged from small to big, or from large to small, however you want to say that, form a trapezoid. You worked out what it is yet? Well, it's considered to be an ancient lithophone. The instrument has been handed over to the Binh Thong Museum. Earlier, the museum, in coordination with a Japanese expert, also discovered another lithophone at the site only 3 kilometres away, from the place where this 3,000-year-old one was found. Well, the first thing I've had to do is actually type lithophone into Google and find out a little bit more about this rather bizarre musical instrument. I suggest you do the same. Now, staying in that sort of area, we head up to China, where three Paleolithic sites have been discovered recently to the west of China's Henan province by an archaeological team from the Henan Provincial Institute of Cultural Relics and Archaeology. The three new sites are located in Lijing village, about 1.5 kilometres west of the Zhuchangman site. An archaeological team found cultural layers rich in animal fossils and stone tools around 4 metres below the ground. The team leader said that it was unlike those at the Zhuchangman site, where as animal remains at the three new sites included burnt bones, with some of them having burn marks at either end, which actually suggests human activity. Fascinating. And now, yes, here we have Neolithic ball bearings. According to a new theory, Neolithic engineers may have used ball bearings in the construction of Stonehenge. The same technique that allows vehicles and machineries to run smoothly today could have been used to transport the monument's massive standing stones more than 4,000 years ago. No one has yet successfully explained how these heavy slabs used to build Stonehenge were shifted from their quarries to Salisbury Plain in Wiltshire. Some of these blue stones weighed 4 tons each and were brought a distance of 150 miles from Pembrokeshire in Wales. Experts hit on the new idea after examining mysterious stone balls found near Stonehenge-like monuments in Aberdeenshire in Scotland. About the size of a tennis ball, they're precisely fashioned to be within a millimetre of the same size. This suggests they were meant to be used together in some... Hold on. Actually, coming from Scotland myself, I think what we're talking about are the 425 Neolithic balls. They're not actually balls. In fact, they range from having 3 to about 136 knobbles on them and spikes. Recently, I was actually handling a genuine one which had just come up in front of the treasure trove panel. So they're hardly millimetre accurate, same size tennis ball shaped objects. And I have to say, I don't know of any Stonehenge monuments up in Aberdeenshire. I really do wish that people would be a bit more careful in how they do some research. So moving on from that non-story, let's move on to Serbia, where a sensational discovery of 7,500-year-old copper tools has been found up to 8 centuries older than has previously been suspected. It's now compelling scientists to reevaluate existing theories about where and when man began using metal. Axes, hammers, hooks and needles were found interspersed with other artefacts from a settlement that burned down over 7,000 years ago at Plochnik, 200 kilometres south of Belgrade. Scientists have previously concluded that the mining, extraction and manipulation of copper began in Asia Minor, spreading from there. With the find in Plochnik, a parallel and simultaneous development of those skills in several places is now seeming more likely. The site is believed to cover some 120 hectares and is buried under several metres of soil. Serbian archaeologists have so far exposed 3 houses, the largest measuring 8 by 5 metres. The layer of earth the home stood on is still blackened from the scorching heat that destroyed the village. It's unclear what caused the fire, and there's been no damage found that would indicate an outside attack. The huts collapsed in on their contents, with mud bricks and ashes burying all that was inside. Contents included pottery, statues, tools, and even a work table. What a fabulous find to get there. Disturbing news, however, in Afghanistan. A Chinese company is eager to begin developing the world's second largest unexploited copper mine, which unfortunately lies beneath the ruins of a 2,600-year-old Buddhist monastery. Beijing put $3.5 billion into the mine, the largest foreign investment in Afghanistan so far, and the Afghan government stands to rake in a potential $1.2 billion every year in revenues from the mine, as well, of course, as the creation of some well-needed jobs. In the meantime, however, archaeologists are racing to salvage what they can from a major 7th century BCE religious site along the famed Silk Road connecting Asia and the Middle East. The ruins, including the monastery and domed shrines known as stupas, will largely be destroyed once construction of the mine begins. The Chinese government-backed China Metallurgical Group Core, we'll just be calling them MGC from now on, plan to start building the mine at the end of 2011, but under an informal understanding with the Kabul government, has granted archaeologists 3 years for a salvage excavation. Laura Tedesco, an archaeologist brought in by the US government embassy to work on the sites in Afghanistan, pointed out that the site is just so massive it could easily take 10 years of archaeology just to salvage some of the information. Philippe Marquis, a French archaeologist advising the Afghans, said the salvage effort is piecemeal and minimal, held back by a lack of funds and personnel. The monastery complex has been partly excavated, revealing hallways and rooms decorated with frescoes and filled with clay and stone statues of standing and reclining Buddhas, some of them reaching up to 3 meters in height. The MGC, however, appear to be pushing the archaeologists to complete the excavation ahead of schedule. An Afghan archaeologist overseeing the dig said he has no idea when representatives might just tell him work is over, so he tries not to think about deadlines. Funding from foreign governments has been promised, but has yet also to materialise. The MGC say that they have been incredibly cooperative and have helped the archaeologists with dirt removal, even asking them what more they need to do. Zakir, however, an Afghan archaeologist, laughed and was quoted as saying, "Yes, they are very helpful. They want to help us finish quickly. They want us out of here." One of the latest additions to the Megalithic Portal website are personal site visit logs. This is a major new feature for the Megalithic Portal, where you can add personal comments with text, or perhaps just rate the site in a series of tick boxes. This new feature has been funded by subscriptions and is also intended to be an easy way to take part. All you have to do is click on "I would like to visit" in a similar way to like buttons on Facebook. The site visit logs are displayed on the main site pages, and they will also form the basis of a new site tour system, allowing anyone to string together descriptions of different sites that they visited or would like to visit into a tour, illustrated with images of their choice. The Megalithic Portal is, of course, one of the leading resources for anyone interested in the ancient world. Well done to them. There seems to be a flurry of activity coming from people like the Megalithic Portal, Stone Pages, and of course the fabulous Past Horizons website. Now to an absolutely fascinating story. When the remains of one of Ireland's oldest murder victims came out of the bog in May 2003 near Crockin Hill in County Meath in Ireland, Irish police were called in to investigate a possible murder. By time radiocarbon dating had revealed that he had lived well over 2,000 years ago, between 362 and 175 BCE, archaeologists had already taken over the case. But they still had a murder inquiry on their hands, and a brutal one at that. Old Crockin Man, as he was christened, was a man who once stood an impressive 6 foot 6 inches tall. He'd been stabbed in the chest, and his nipples had been slashed, and a twisted branch of hazel threaded through a hole cut in his upper arm. He was then beheaded and dumped in a boggy pool on an ancient territorial boundary. This Iron Age discovery would have been remarkable on its own, but 3 months before, and just 25 miles away, another man's body had been taken from a peat bog on the boundaries of Meath and West Meath. Analysis of his remains revealed that he'd lived at around the same time as old Crockin Man. In stark contrast, however, Clonycavan Man was slight, but his hair was gelled up in a style akin to the Mohican punk haircuts, adding inches to his height. His elaborate hairstyle showed that Irish men in the Iron Age sought out imported luxury products, such as this hair gel made from a resin that can only be found in pine trees in Spain and France. This man was clearly an aristocrat who was privileged enough to be able to pay a lot of time and attention to his physical appearance. Yet, he suffered 3 axe blows to the head, a further blow to the chest, and was then disemboweled. Like his neighbour, old Crockin Man, he was dumped in a boggy grave on a territorial boundary. A team of 40 international experts set about unravelling the secrets of these two men and, in doing so, have succeeded in opening an exceptional window on Ireland's Celtic past, thanks to digital technology, we now know what Clonycavan Man might have looked like. Analysis of his nails showed that he ate meat regularly, an expensive luxury then, but his final meal was one of buttermilk and cereal. Eamon Kelly, keeper of antiquities at the Irish National Museum, thinks that old Crochan Man's final meal may provide proof that he was being sacrificed to the goddess of the land. The slicing of both men's nipples might seem rather grotesque and bizarre in modern context, but in ancient times, the kissing of a king's nipple was seen as a mark of respect. I kid you not, it was actually an act of submission. Don't try this at home, though. Cutting these men's nipples would have actually prevented them from ruling as kings in this life, or perhaps the next. Mr. Kelly believes that they were very possibly kings, or at least failed candidates for kings. The fact that they were found on boundaries is also full of significance. Boundaries have been important since earliest times, and according to Kelly, you often find offerings deposited in them since the Bronze Age. Kelly believes that the hazel branch cut into old Crochan Man's arm was intended as some sort of semi-magical charm. He thinks it's a spancel, or a type of tether that was used to restrain animals. There are extensive references to these tethers in mythology and how they were used magically on both humans and animals. In this case, the spancel could have been used to invoke a protective taboo safeguarding the boundary to ward off interlopers. I can just think, actually, there's easier ways, like shutting the gate. But anyway, thanks to the discovery of old Crochan Man, Clonycavan Man, and about five other Iron Age bodies, these people's rites and rituals are now coming into a sharper focus. A new study in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences presents dental evidence that Neanderthals matured more rapidly than modern humans. The researchers examined 11 teeth from Neanderthals and other early hominids using synchrotron microcomputed tomography. The technique is a high-resolution version of the X-ray CT scans used in the medical setting. X-ray images are recorded from different directions to model the internal structures of a sample. The X-ray sources charged particles that are then accelerated around a curved path or ring until synchrotron radiation is emitted. Professor Tanya Smith from Harvard University and her colleagues used this specialized tomography to count the growth rings in the sample teeth and very accurately determine the time of death. This was compared to the age of death that was estimated from the physical development of the individual. In one case of a Neanderthal child, the age was determined to be only 3 years old, rather than the 5 years that was previously estimated from the physical development. It's known that our primate ancestors mature much more rapidly, reproduce earlier, and die younger than humans. This new evidence about Neanderthals indicates that the long childhood characteristics of modern humans is a relatively recent evolutionary development. Humans' extended maturation may have facilitated additional learning and complex cognition, possibly giving early Homo sapiens an advantage over their Neanderthal cousins. I just hope it made them go extra toys. A call to action has been proposed in the Journal of Coastal Conservation. A study by Leslie Reeder from the South Methodist University in the USA and Torben Rick at the Smithsonian Institution and, of course, John Erlandson from the University of Oregon suggests that the archaeologists should begin to prioritise which coastal archaeological treasures should be preserved. Rising sea levels, erosions of coastline and wave action threaten thousands of sites, as well as increasing development of highly desirable beachfront locations. The researchers used the Santa Barbara Channel off the coast of California as a model for their work. Other sites on the Atlantic and Gulf coasts are at even higher risk. We have to find a way to act by first quantifying those sites most vulnerable to destruction. This story is uncovered in quite a bit of detail with added links in, of course, Past Horizons. Best way to find it is go to, of course, Past Horizons and search for Torben, T-O-R-B-E-N, in the top right search box. Archaeologists digging at Must Farm Quarry near Whittlesley in Cambridgeshire have recently shown off some amazing finds. Bronze Age weapons, textiles and even pots full of food. And most remarkable of all, footprints have been found. Pottery, wicker fishing traps, wooden walkways and bronze tools have all been revealed. The site was a wooden pier on the banks of the River Nene, dating to around about 1200 BCE. The Cambridge Archaeological Unit started digging at the site after an archaeologist told them he had seen wooden piles in the water when he was swimming in the quarry as a child. Archaeologist Tim Mallon said, "It's even more impressive than Flag Fen. The textile finds alone are unique within England." The archaeologists quite literally can now walk in the steps of Bronze Age Britons, uncovering human and animal footprints in the mud of the site. Mr. Mallon, head of archaeology for the environmental firm SLR Consulting, explained that the settlement was unusual. Instead of being built on dry land, the buildings were attached to a large wooden platform balanced on thick oak piles driven into the bed of the River Nene. Archaeologists are not sure of the purpose of the Bronze Age structure. Its arrangement helped preserve the finds when a fire broke out sometime between 700 and 500 BCE. The wind acted under the supports to build up an intense heat, which incinerated the pier. As a consequence of the fire, the building above and all that was in them burned quickly and dropped into the water, where combustion was rapidly quenched and the contents preserved. Rising sea levels gradually flooded this part of Cambridgeshire from the late Bronze Age, causing people to retreat to higher, drier areas, with wooden walkways linking these areas built above the bogs. The contents of the 50 pots of food are still awaiting analysis by experts. The site is so significant that the owner, construction firm Hansen, has ensured its preservation by building a bund around it to prevent it from drying out. Now the Cambridgeshire Archaeology Unit has moved on to another part of the quarry where two burial mounds or barrows, cobbled tracks and fishing traps have also been uncovered. Last week, moving up now to Scotland, contractors working in the grounds of the former Woodley Hospital between Kirkintilloch and Lenzie in East Dumbartonshire unearthed what is thought to be a wooden roundhouse dating back thousands of years. Glasgow University Archaeological Research Division, or GARD, have visited the site, and Dr. Gavin McGregor, the project manager at Glasgow University Archaeological Research Division, or GARD, said the date of the structure is unclear at this early stage, but potentially dates to somewhere in between the second millennium BC and the first few centuries CE. Notably, the site is relatively close to the Antonine Wall. If the structure proves to date from the mid to later 2nd century CE, it may be contemporary with a Roman presence in the area. Sounds like they're not going to be drawn there. Archaeoacoustics, or acoustic archaeology, focuses on the use and experience of sound in past cultures. Researchers at the Acoustical Society of America's recent conference in Cancun presented their investigations into a range of fascinating sound experiences that were devised by ancient people around the world. Miriam Kohler of Stanford University's Center for Computer Research and Acoustics has been mapping the maze-like tunnels, drains and hallways constructed by the Peruvian Chavin some 3,000 years ago. She states that the structures could be physically disorientating and that the acoustic environment was very different than the natural world. Giant seashell trumpets found in the maze could also have contributed to the creation of a soundscape, and light ducts used the sun to create distorted shadows of the maze users. Chavin iconography shows people mixed with animal features in altered states of being. There's peyote and mucus trails coming from their noses, indicating people using psychoactive plant substances. They were taking drugs, basically, and having hallucinogenic experiences. Evidently, the locals were adept at creating and manipulating sensory experiences involving sound. Elsewhere in America, at the Maya site of Chichen Itza in northern Yucatan, acoustic engineer David Lubman has suggested that the bird-like echo from the Kukulkan temple is an intentional feature of the site. He compared the sound print of the echo with that of the Quetzal bird, sacred to the Maya, and found that the two prints matched. He associates the echo with the steep staircase on the front of the temple. It was also found that rulers were able to address large crowds without shouting due to the acoustic design of the site's giant ball court. British researchers at Stonehenge are also investigating the acoustic effects of drumming at the site as well. And once again, if you pop across to Past Horizons, you'll find looked at in a slightly more detail and a video that shows you, or at least lets you listen to, the incredible sounds coming from the Kukulcan Temple in Chichen Itza. Archaeologists in Tasmania have revealed an exceptional site on the banks of the Jordan River outside Hobart. Eight test pits were dug yielding nearly 1,500 artefacts, leading the team to conclude that millions of artefacts are potentially buried at this rich site. These artefacts provide the earliest evidence of human habitation in the Southern Hemisphere. Archaeologist Dr. Rob Patton labelled the site as being of extremely high significance, since it has the potential to give us a glimpse into an unknown part of world history and the spread of Homo sapiens across the Earth. Unfortunately, the state government have plans to drive $177 million four-lane highway and bridge through the area to provide what they would say is essential infrastructure. The area was used as a meeting place from 40,000 years ago and by three major tribal groups until as recently as 1828, 25 years after Europeans' colonization had first begun. That process of colonization involved the killing and deportation of all the Aborigines and left little trace of Aboriginal culture on the island. Now, despite the importance of the site, the government is resisting plans to divert the road, claiming that alternative routes are prohibitively expensive and that no damage will be caused by the sinking of concrete pylons or covering the site in rubble. The legal director of the Tasmanian Aboriginal Centre, Michael Mansell, calls the government's plans cultural vandalism. They really have no appreciation of anything that's different from their own white culture, he says. To them, white heritage is sacrosanct, but Aboriginal heritage, they're happy to build straight on top of it. You'll never see them pouring rubble or building a bridge over the top of Port Arthur. One Australian MP, Andrew Wilkie, has called for the site to be given National Heritage status, and both conservation and Aboriginal groups are asking for federal intervention. In the meantime, Aboriginal people are awaiting a Supreme Court ruling about whether the Tasmanian Heritage Council acted correctly in deciding not to protect the site may blockade the bulldozers themselves. Well, on that piece of shock news, don't forget that our news, of course, is now available on iPhones, iPods, Touch and iPads. You'll be able to get that if you go to www.stonepages.com/app. And have a look at pasthorizons.com for some cracking articles and news stories. Remember, more can also be found on the traditional Stone Pages website, news.stonepages.com. Thanks so much for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you will return to us again next week.